Recent modern history, particularly since the turn of the century, can be characterized by the unprecedented and alarmingly colossal economic growth of China. China's economy, with an average annual growth rate of 10% for the past three decades until 2010, has led the country to becoming the world's largest consumer and producer of energy in order to sustain its momentum. However, within the past decade, there's been a constant decline in economic growth, from a high of 14% in 2007 to under 7% in 2015. This trend is largely due to the global shift in low-end, natural resource-intensive manufacturing to neighboring price-competitive countries such as Vietnam. Moreover, manufacturing as a percentage of global GDP has declined 5% over the past 20 years while it accounts for 30% of China's economy. In order to maintain its economy, especially its threatened tertiary manufacturing sector, the Chinese government has taken to the use of soft power and geopolitical relations to acquire natural resources. These tactics have ultimately led to the neocolonization of sub-Saharan Africa. The Chinese government has been building connections with African nations since Chairman Mao Zedong unveiled his Three Worlds Theory in 1974. Rather than defining China as a second world country as it was associated at the time, he placed it in the third world. Deng Xiaoping, China's historic reformer who publicly unveiled Mao's theory in his 1974 speech to the United Nations General Assembly, stated, "The third world countries strongly demand that the present extremely unequal international economic relations be changed, and they have made many rational proposals of reform. The Chinese government and people warmly endorse and firmly support all just propositions made by third world countries." The strategic emphasis of a shared history of Western abuse and colonialism marked a radical change of foreign policy in order to poise China as an ally of Africa. This establishment of commonalities has been significant in forging African relations, as the continent has suffered from a history of imperialist injustices from the Berlin Conference of 1884 to 85 to the forced practice of slavery. Renewed interest in Africa led to the formation of the Forum of Chinese African Cooperation, or FOCAC, in 1996 as an alleged framework for collective dialogue between China and African countries on the basis of equality and mutual benefit, according to their website. At the first meeting of FOCAC, the group instituted Chinese educational programs, massive debt forgiveness, and the promotion of political cooperation to create a favorable environment for China-Africa business affiliation and trade. From the initiation of this policy to the fifth meeting of FOCAC in 2012, China has become sub-Saharan Africa's single largest trading partner, having spent more money in the region than the World Bank since 2000, maintained a trade surplus for 10 years, and imported sub-Saharan African goods on account of 17% of the continent's trade. To this extent, China has certainly profited through its economic relationship with Africa. In defense of its partnership with many African nations, China claims to be addressing their infrastructure gaps, boosting employment, facilitating industrialization, transferring technology and knowledge, and expanding power generation and distribution capabilities. Between 2000 and 2014, Chinese banks, contractors, and the government loaned more than $86 billion to Africa, according to SAIS-CARI. Most of these loans go towards infrastructure. China has funded infrastructure projects in 50 of 54 countries in Africa, including whole cities in Angola, Tanzania's entire railroad system, the Democratic Republic of Congo or DRC's highways, and Addis Ababa's subway system. The Addis Ababa-Djibouti Railway was finished in January of 2017 and cost about $4 billion. This amount is nearly a quarter of the Ethiopian government's $12.7 billion budget. Such an insurmountable debt as accumulated by Ethiopia, as well as the other 49 countries of Africa that China loans to, cannot be feasibly paid off by a developing country. These African nations end up in debt cycles through the extraction of monetary aid, ultimately becoming economically reliant on China. The implied benefits of China-Africa relations are simply unrealistic. While GDP in sub-Saharan Africa grew by 5% in 2011, growth was set to drop to its lowest level in more than 20 years at 1.4% in 2016, according to the International Monetary Fund's Regional Economic Outlook. Ryan Kelly's article, "How China's Soft Power is Building a Neocolonial System in Africa," specifies, "The primary vehicle for China's economic attraction is the low-interest Resource for Infrastructure Loans, or R41s, which allow the CCP and Chinese firms to corner markets and set prices, and by extension, seize control of impoverished nations' economies. From a fiscal perspective, an R41 loan is a low-interest loan that exchanges Chinese infrastructure investments for African natural resources." On the surface, this seems like a win-win deal. China is in need of energy for its economic sustenance, and Africa is in need of infrastructural development. Two factors make R41 loans predatory, on the contrary, revealing a symbiotic relationship. a lack of diversification of economic partners on the part of African nations, and the liquidity and debt crisis that R41 loans cause. Once ensnared in debt, China extorts political favors ranging from breaking promises on local African employment and ignorance of local labor laws to offering exorbitant packages for nations to vote with China and the United Nations or break ties with Taiwan. The targets of predatory Chinese loans are observably easy to manipulate and exploit due to their economic profiles. Kelly writes in his article that, of China's top 8 debtors in Africa, 5 have signed R41 loans: Angola, Sudan, Nigeria, DRC, and Ghana, and every one of these nations owes China billions of dollars in natural resources. Furthermore, at the time the R41 loans were issued, 3 of the 5 nations, Angola, Sudan, and DRC, had recently exited bloody civil wars. All 5 nations had unranked or junk bond designation by the 3 major credit rating agencies, and all 5 nations were in the bottom 10 or had unranked economic complexity indices, which declined since the nations began dealing with China. The monetarily depraved condition of these countries are easily taken advantage of with risky low-interest R41 loans paid for with natural resources such as hydrocarbons and minerals. Most notable is the case of Angola. Angola signed an R41 loan in 2004 with China and leveraging its massive petroleum reserves in exchange for $2 billion of infrastructure investment. But as the price of oil has fallen, Angola's oil-backed debt has increased to upwards of $25 billion, to which Angola has consistently fallen behind on payments. The country has been forced to sign an extension in 2007, as well as a new R41 loan in 2009, and attempts to regain lines of credit. The massive debt accumulation of Angola has given China control of the African nation's economy and petroleum reserves. Over the last decade, Chinese imports of Angolan goods have consistently risen and now account for over 35% of the African nation's economy. Furthermore, the portion of Angola's petroleum reserves that is shipped to China has increased from 4 or 5 of Angola's 50 to 60 tankers per month to upwards of 40 to 50 tankers per month, equating to a 1,000% increase. Angola is trapped, and that disobedience of China could have catastrophic economic consequences, while continued compliance further relinquishes economic autonomy. Thus, Angola is one of many sub-Saharan African countries to become a neo-colony of China. As defined by Kwame Nkrumah, the first Ghanaian president after the overthrow of British rule in 1957, the essence of neocolonialism is that the state which is subject to it is, in theory, independent and has all the outward trappings of international sovereignty. In reality, its economic system and thus its political policy is directed from outside. Through diplomatic relations using soft power to exploit developing nations, China has plunged its sub-Saharan partners in debt cycles to establish economic reliance, effectively stimulating its own economy with natural resources by the process of neocolonialism. Nkrumah writes in his book, Neocolonialism, the Last Stage of Imperialism, "Neocolonialism is also the worst form of imperialism. For those who practice it, it means power without responsibility, and for those who suffer from it, it means exploitation without redress. By harnessing the vicious cycle of colonialism in its modern expression, Chinese activity in Africa is a repeat of world powers exploiting countries for natural resources under the pretense of modernization." Zhao Chansu, who worked for an NGO in Tanzania and studied international political economy at the London School of Economics, writes in an article, "Europeans built infrastructure in Africa at the turn of the century, purportedly also for the local economic development, but in essence, the projects were used for natural resource extraction. The predecessor of both the Nairobi-Mombasa and Addis Ababa-Djibouti railways can be categorized as such. Both connect inland regions with mineral deposits with major ports on the Indian Ocean. Therefore, Chinese transactions in Africa are a repetition of European imperialist activity, if not worse. Billions of dollars in natural resources are gained in exchange for the building of infrastructure meant to transport the owed resources to China in a constant escalating cycle. While exercising colonial power, similar to the extent of imperialistic nations before the Second World War, the dangers of exploitation without redress, as forewarned by Nkrumah, have already proven to be worsening issues within the past decade. For instance, within 6 months during 2017, 31 Chinese miners were arrested in Zambia for a variety of illegal mining practices, including child labor and unlicensed smelting. China declared the evidence presented to the Zambian government insubstantial, and given China had invested over $1 billion in Zambia, all miners were released within 48 hours. Zambia's economic dependence on China clearly equates to political control at the expense of human rights. The same can be seen in Ghana, where 160 Chinese nationals were asked to leave the country for crimes that range from polluting water supplies with cyanide and pesticides to the deaths of illegal miners inside their illegal gold mines. China, as previously mentioned, had spent billions of dollars in infrastructure deals and R-41 loans in the country and sent diplomats to secure their release. As a neo-colonial force in many African countries, China faces no consequences for the violation of Africans while reaping even more benefits. Furthermore, the Chinese neo-colonization of sub-Saharan Africa proves to be similar to European colonialism of the last century in that ethnic Chinese enclaves have been forming in African countries. Their negative impact primarily comprises unemployment. Despite Chinese claims of providing work for local African communities through infrastructure projects, many of the skilled and unskilled workers who work on these large infrastructure projects are Chinese expatriates sent from China. They account for over one-third of the 1 million Chinese migrants to Africa and displace jobs from the extensive number of unemployed Africans. Sub-Saharan Africa's current unemployment rate is 7%, well above the global average of 5%. Unemployment has particularly affected Ghana, where the youth unemployment rate is 48%. Since Ghana has leveraged mineral and petroleum reserves in exchange for $2 billion in Chinese loans, massive amounts of debt to China deprive the government of financial means to handle unemployment. This has created two problems for the West African nation: one, an unskilled labor force, and two, a growing resentment for the Chinese laborers with jobs. Additionally, the Chinese benefit, as the lack of skilled laborers allows for Chinese firms to employ Chinese and flout labor laws. This disadvantage also destabilizes economies, thereby creating demands for more lines of credit and predatory R-41 loans. Beyond economically, China has utilized African neo-colonies' financial dependence as means for political manipulation. According to researchers at the College of William & Mary's Aid Data Project, in exchange for a 10% increase in voting with China at the United Nations, African countries receive on average a whopping 86% increase in aid. Furthermore, of China's top 8 debtors, the 5 who have signed R-41 loans have also seen their voting patterns change. Angola, Sudan, Nigeria, DRC, and Ghana vote with China between 83 and 93% of the time, according to The Economist. One particular political agenda China has tried to enforce through African neo-colonies is the denunciation of Taiwan, the political adversary to the CCP. In January of 2017, Bloomberg reported that Beijing offered Burkina Faso upwards of $50 billion in infrastructure spending in favor of dropping relations with Taiwan. Foreign Minister Alpha Barry, however, reaffirmed the West African nation's commitment to Taiwan, saying, "We get outrageous proposals from China telling us if you sign with Beijing, we'll offer you $50 billion or even more. Taiwan is our friend and our partner. We're happy and we see no reason to reconsider the relationship." On the other hand, the African country of Sao Tome demanded $100 million to maintain diplomatic ties with Taiwan. When Taiwan refused, Sao Tome cut diplomatic ties and summarily received millions of dollars in aid and doctors from the Chinese government. To the point of even slighting its foreign competitors, China has fully entrapped African nations such as Sao Tome into serving its economic and political needs in a symbiotic relationship. Chinese neocolonization, while most severe in sub-Saharan Africa, extends to former colonies throughout southeastern Asia and grows still. Sri Lanka turned over Hambantota Port and massive amounts of land in Colombo Port to Chinese multinational corporations in turn for debt relief, while China has instituted a military advisor in Pakistan. Rather than local favoritism or United Nations votes, as is the case in Africa, Chinese political support from Southeast Asia often requires ideological purity, from the neglection of Taiwan in favor of one China policy to the disabuse of the Dalai Lama, as well as participation in Chinese initiatives such as the One Belt, One Road Initiative or the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank. With influence from Saigon and Pyongyang to Johannesburg and Accra, China's neocolonial empire is ever expanding. As China becomes more powerful, the global community must acknowledge how African neo-colonies are forced to sacrifice their free wills in terms of political and economic control to China, just as they did to Western imperial powers in the last century. Even more so, how the threat of neo-colonialism is much worse. No revolution can get rid of China so simply, and no consequences domestically or abroad can force China to withdraw. Countries that do not receive Chinese cash fall behind economically and become politically isolated, while those that do are fettered to the whim of the Chinese government. The gap between the rich and poor on a global scale widens as Africa's natural resources are depleted. In the words of Kwame Nkrumah, "Above all, neocolonialism, like colonialism before it, postpones the facing of the social issues which will have to be faced by the fully developed sector of the world before the danger of world war can be eliminated or the problem of world poverty resolved. If the issue of poverty is to be faced, Chinese neocolonization of sub-Saharan Africa must cease.